This is the first installment of the 2019 Boys in the Tracks interview podcast. The Boys in the Tracks double homicide of 1987 remains one of the most compelling and enduring murder mysteries in modern American history, and certainly in the state of Arkansas. Our guest today is Linda Ives, mother of Kevin Ives, one of the victims of the Boys in the Tracks murders in 1987. Linda, tell us about Kevin and what it was like with him growing up in your home.
It's a little hard to put into words, actually. I guess I was pretty young when I had my children. I think I was 20 when Kevin was born. And he was born, actually, into a whole bunch of girls. My folks had two girls. My sister had three girls. And I had Alicia. And then I had Kevin. And so he was really pretty much everybody's boy, literally. My dad was especially close to him. And they spent much of their time together. Kevin used to call him when he was very young, three or so, and tell Daddy to come get him to spend the night at his house. And Daddy would say, "Kevin, it's dark outside," and Kevin would tell him to turn on his headlights. it was just he was different for all of us. And as much as we loved every one of our girls, you know, it was different with Kevin. Just none of us had ever raised a boy or been around a boy much, and it is very different in a lot of ways. I think there's also a really special bond between a mother and a son. Certainly I didn't love him more than I loved Alicia, and probably maybe was even closer to Alicia, especially as she got a little bit older. But you know, it's different with the son, and he was a mother's boy, and that's just the way I wanted him. And I felt very fortunate and blessed to have a son and a daughter. You know, I didn't think it got any better than that. And it was just we had a good life. We had a good marriage. We had a son and a daughter. They were both good kids that we never had any problems with. And you know, life was good. Larry worked for the railroad, was a locomotive engineer, and he was in and out of town for all of our lives, my children's life and my life. We were used to him being home one night and gone a day and a half or so. And, you know, we all worked our schedule around him. We liked to go to the lake a lot, and kids played ball. Both Alicia and Kevin played ball their growing up years. Kevin started when he was about 6 years old. And we spent a lot of time at the ball field, a lot of time at the lake, and just doing ordinary things. You know, I used to ask myself years ago, you know, trying to figure out how on earth my family, that was so totally normal and ordinary, could get involved in anything to do with all of the things that I think are involved in Kevin's death.
Right, right. You, before we started recording the interview today, you had mentioned kind of a funny anecdote about when Kevin was born and you were bringing him home from the hospital, and apparently your daughter Alicia, who was 2 and a half at the time, decided, "Well, I think I'd like to be the mom too," right?
Absolutely. She just adored him from the very beginning. You know, she wanted to mother him. She wanted to, you know, help diaper him. She wanted to feed him. She wanted to hold him. You know, there was never any rivalry for toys or things. As they got just a little bit older, if Kevin wanted it, she gave it to him. There was no question whether or not he would get what he wanted. You know, having grown up with one sister, and we fought, I think, every day of our lives, literally, half killed each other sometimes. You know, I guess I just expected that it would be like it was when my sister and I fought all the time. You know, but there was never any fighting going on with Kevin and Alicia. And I think I was telling you one story where I had him on a pallet on the floor when he was, oh, I don't know, 6, 7 months old, something like that. And, of course, Alicia would have been 3 by that time. And I looked up, and she had him by the leg, dragging him behind her down the hall to her room. And, of course, I nearly freaked out over it, and I, you know, ran and grabbed him and everything. I said, Alicia, what are you doing? And she says, I'm taking to my room to play. And that was just the way it was with them. And it was, you know, even as they got older, of course, I'm sure they had skirmishes, maybe even some I didn't know about, I don't know. But, you know, there was just never all of the fighting that went on like there was in my household when I was growing up. So it was, it was an easy existence, actually. You know, I think for most of us, all of us, you know, things were good. You know, we had the kids and had fun and enjoyed them and their activities. And, you know, we had a boat. We had I'm not boasting or gloating or anything, but we had everything we needed, certainly, and a lot of what we wanted. And a lot of the things that we had particularly because we wanted the kids to hang out at our house. And they did. All of the neighborhood kids hung out at our house as they became teenagers. You know, but we had, you know, like a, I don't know, a trampoline and a pool and a pool table and, you know, anything I thought that would entertain them, that would keep them interested and at home. And that's where all the kids hung out.
And then eventually Kevin got his driver's license.
He did get his driver's license, of course, when he turned 16, the big highlight of his life, I suppose, as he didn't live too much longer after that. But he turned 16, and, you know, in our neighborhood, there were 8 little boys who were all the same age, and, you know, they all ran around together from the time they were young. They played ball together and grew up through high school together. And, you know, I knew all of them. I knew all of their parents. They lived in our neighborhood. And, you know, I was comfortable with the things that, you know, all of the kids were allowed to do, the rules and everything of their homes. But when he got his car, things, of course, changed. And he spread his wings, I guess, is, I think, one way to put it. And, you know, he and his best friend, Mike Mitchell, had recently had a falling out over a girl. They both liked the same girl. And so Kevin became good friends with Don, met him at school.
Don Henry.
With Don Henry, yes. And I remember him telling stories about things Don did and said all the time. And he thought Don was just really funny and fun to be around. From the things that he told me, I didn't know Don. In fact, I only saw him a time or two when he was at the house. And, but, you know, I didn't know his parents at all. And, so I, you know, mothers are mothers, overprotective mothers, especially, you know, it was just a different situation for me. And of course, anytime you let a teenager go with a car, you know, it's a stressful time anyway. And so, you know, there were some growing pains there, I think, more on my part than anybody else's part. You know, it's just hard to let go of any child a little bit. And, you know, my kids always thought I held on a little too tightly and was overprotective. But, you know, I know now that there is no such thing as being overprotective. So, you know, Kevin and Don began running around together, and began doing things he had never done before, and you know, things like that that, you know, every parent stresses over, I suppose. And but we never had any problems. In fact, we'd bought Kevin a car for his birthday, an older Camaro, and we used it a lot as leverage, you know, as most parents do, you know, as an incentive to keep grades up, or, you know, to stay within the rules and regulations, if you will. And, you know, we never had any trouble with him, actually. I anticipated it, but he never did have any trouble. Alicia, and part of the problem with Kevin, I think our fears that really never materialized with Kevin came from Alicia, who was, I mean, if there was ever a good child, it was Alicia, and you could depend on her, and you could also depend on Kevin. But Alicia was like a straight A student, and I don't know, she just never did anything, you know, to worry us or give us concern. But she was a terrible driver.
Uh-oh.
And she had the day we bought her car, for her and Larry and her went to pick it up, she turned it over underwater on the way home.
She turned it over underwater.
Yes.
Perhaps she
my
could,
biggest fear.
Perhaps you could kind of amplify on that, because it's a difficult word picture.
It was, you know, talk about your parents' worst fear with a new driver. And they had bought her car in Stuttgart. And her and her daddy had gone to pick it up. And they were on the way home. And the car had electric windows. And this was back in 1985, I guess. And at that point in time, I hadn't even been allowed to have electric windows by Larry, because he was afraid that if you were ever in a wreck and underwater, you wouldn't be able to get out the windows. I mean, that was just some kind of crazy hang-up he had. And so at that point, I hadn't had a car with electric windows, but this car... they didn't make without electric windows. It was a little Nissan 200 SX sport car. And so he did not want to buy that car because of that. And he and her had many conversations about that, but ended up buying the car for her, of course. And when they went to get it, they had just gotten out on the highway and built up their speed to about 55. Alicia was following Larry because she didn't know the way home, of course. And he was watching her in the rearview mirror, he says, and was kind of watching how the car tracked and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, it was like she made a right-hand turn. He said, it's like she just made a sharp right. And it's through England where the rice fields are, and there were deep ditches.
England, Arkansas, yes.
And the deep ditches on either side, and they were filled with water. And when she made that right-hand turn, it just rolled. And it was about halfway submerged. And, of course, Larry had to stop and turn around and run back and get to her. He said he could hear her screaming, you know, from the highway. And he said all I could think of was to find a rock. Where was the rock that he could break a window with? And, of course, panic-stricken, needless to say. And he said, but he knew she was alive, at least, because he could hear her screaming. And what she was screaming about, she didn't realize she was upside down. And she didn't realize she was underwater until she tried to open the door. And water, a little water came in the door. And then that scared her. And she said the first thing she thought of was, Mama's going to be so mad at me, because she was drinking a Diet Coke and I'd warned her about drinking and eating in the car and ruining the interior. And she's going to know I was drinking Coke and spilled it all inside this car. And, of course, when she got out of the car, they got her out. Larry and some passerbys got her out. And she was standing on the road up there. And when a wrecker got there, they had to pull her car out on its top and open the doors and let all the water drain out of it. And, of course, it was muddy. And she was just panic-stricken because first day she had her car, she had messed up the interior of it. But anyway, she went on to have a number of wrecks after that, like regularly.
But the thing about the car being full of water and mud is that that would tend to obscure that there had been some Diet Coke making a mess,
right?
Yeah.
And she was also worried about her white shorts at the time, it seems like.
Well, who wouldn't be?
Yeah. So, but anyway, we survived that. And she went on to have probably 6 or 8 wrecks in a short period of time thereafter. You know, the only thing I can say is the worst thing about I can think of with Alicia was she was a terrible driver. And, of course, I still think she is, but she hadn't had any wrecks in a good long while. She even wrecked my car while her car was being fixed one time. So with Kevin, when we went to buy his car,
you expected possibly that he would take after his sister.
Yeah, if it was this bad with Alicia, what on earth is it going to be like with Kevin,
because
a boy?
There's the thought that boys tend to be worse drivers,
yes, absolutely.
Especially when they're young.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, we just lived in dread of Kevin driving. And so Alicia's car was almost new when we bought it, had a few miles on it. So Larry and I talked about it and all. Of course, our insurance was at the roof. It was higher than our house payment because of all of her wrecks. We got to where we didn't even turn them in and because of the insurance. So then when we went and added Kevin to our insurance, being a boy and his age of 16, it was like, oh my gosh, do we have to take out a loan to, you know, buy insurance? So when we were looking for him a car, we thought, well, and he wanted a Camaro. He was, you know, he was very set on what kind of car he wanted. So we made him go back to the year model where the body style changed and the insurance dropped. You know, it was a
good idea.
You know, it was a money savings plan for us to go to a little bit older Camaro for that reason. And it was a really nice car. It was sharp, had T-tops. He loved it. He totally loved his car as much as anything in the whole world, I guess. Maybe besides his dog, Jake. I would come home nearly every afternoon from working at Alcoa Credit Union at the time. And he'd be in the front yard washing his car every day. And, I mean, he kept it spotless, and he was so proud of it. And it was interesting. We have friends, you know, from Bryant and elsewhere at the time. And we had a couple of people tell us that they were so proud to report to us that, you know, every time they saw Kevin in his car, that he was never showing out or driving fast or doing anything he shouldn't be doing. And he was coming to visit their daughter, actually. You know, he'd go visit all of his girlfriends. And but we had a couple of them tell us that, you know, Kevin was doing what he was supposed to be doing, and he never put a mark on his car, not one. So our fears were unfounded as far as his driving were concerned. Of course, if he'd lived longer, you know, who knows, things might have gotten differently out of hand later on. I don't know, you know, but unfortunately he didn't live long enough to have it very long. He turned 16 in, I guess it was, I can't do the math, about 86. I think we got his car in 86.
Yeah.
He hadn't had it very long when he was killed. In fact, when we put that car up for sale, we kept it for years, actually, about 5 or 6 years, because I couldn't stand to part with it. Larry would talk about selling it because it was deteriorating, and it was sitting in our garage when we had a new vehicle sitting out in the weather, and Larry kept telling me off and on that we needed to sell it, and I would cry and throw a fit every time, and it would sit for a good long while again before it was mentioned again. But when we finally did put it up for sale a few years later, Larry ran an ad on it, and he told me when he left town that, you know, I might get some calls on it. But some man called and was asking about it, and he wanted to know if the car was adult driven or if it belonged to a kid. And of course, my hairs on my arms were already standing up, and tears were already welling up in my eyes just at the idea of talking about it with someone. And I told him, I said, well, it was owned by my son. And his next question to me was, well, what did he do, rag it out or something? And it took me by total surprise. And I was, trying to decide, actually, what to say to him, whether to be nice or to be ugly.
And of course, he had no idea.
No, he had no idea. And I said, well, no, he didn't rag it out. Unfortunately, he was killed first before he had an opportunity to. He didn't drive it very long. And there was dead, total silence on the other end of the line. I thought, well, I'll put him in his place. And he got off the phone real quick. He later called back and talked to Larry, I guess the next day, and wanted to come out and see the car. And he had told Larry what happened. I hadn't mentioned it to Larry, but he had told Larry what happened in the conversation. And he had asked Larry to apologize for him. And Larry came in and told me that, and he said, this guy wants to come look at Kevin's car. He said, I just wanted you to know. And of course, I immediately started crying, stomped off, slammed the door, everything else that always happened when we discussed it. And so the guy came and looked at the car, and Larry came in a while later and said, Linda, he wants to buy the car. And I said, don't you go down one penny on that car. I said, he's going to pay full price for it. You know, not one penny less. He said, Linda, you're being, irrational here. And because he had, set the price to in order to come down a little bit like you usually do.
Sure.
And he said, you're being irrational. And I said, I don't care what I'm being. You know, not one penny less. He didn't get that car for one penny less, Larry. And so Larry left the house, and he came back in, and he said, Linda, he said, I'm taking Kevin's things out of the car, because they were still in there, his brush.
Oh my.
And all of the things that belonged to him.
Oh my.
That he had left in the car. And he said, do you want to come out and look at the car again? And of course, I couldn't even talk. I was crying so hard. And I told him, no, I did not want to see it again. To just tell him to get in it and drive it off. And I said, you didn't take less money for it, did you, Larry? And he never did even answer my question, so I'm sure he did. But anyway, it was very traumatic. I guess because, that's the thing he identified with the most, I guess. The thing he loved the most at the time. And that was just, I think that was one of the very hardest things ever, for me.
Tell me what happened, and tell the people listening what happened August 15th, 1987.
Well, that was the first night that Kevin spent the night with Don Henry.
Right.
And I was immediately uncomfortable with it, not for any reason other than the fact I didn't know Don and I didn't know his parents. I mean, I didn't have any reason to, other than that, to have any reason not to let him. But, all I can say was I was immediately uncomfortable with it. And, and he argued with me, and I first told him no. And he said, Mother, I am 17 years old. He said, you're telling me I can't spend the night with a friend. And of course it was Mother letting go a little bit. That's what he was trying to tell me. So he, basically talked me into it. I relented, and he spent the night with Don. I had asked what time Don had to be in at night, because Kevin had a curfew of 12:30, and You know, I wanted to make sure he wasn't out running around all night long. And, of course, you know, no reason to believe they would be. I just, you know, I didn't know. I didn't know what, you know, what Don was allowed to do and what he wasn't allowed to do.
Right.
And so anyway, we had that conversation. And I told him, I said, Kevin, you know, you better be in by 12:30. He said, I will be, Mom. I will be. And the next morning, Curtis called me about 10 o'clock. He said, are the boys at your house?
Well, that's not a good sign.
And I was shocked. I was, I don't even know how to describe really what I was. I mean, I was immediately panicky. And I said, what are you talking about, Curtis? You know, they're supposed to have been at your house. And he said, well, and I said, did they not come in last night? And he said, no, they came in about 12:15. And, well, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, Doc. That was the next week. He said that
yeah,
they had come
about,
in. Yeah.
Talking about the
right.
Saturday, August
before,
15th.
Yeah, the week before the boys were killed was the first night he spent the night with Don. And
right, the week before. Yeah.
The week before. And, so anyway, he wanted to know if the boys were at my house, and I told him, you know, I was shocked and asked him what he was talking about, that they were supposed to spend the night with him. And he said, well, he and Don had gotten into an argument the night before, and both boys had stormed out of the house and left in Kevin's car. And he thought they were going to Florida, where Don's biological mother lived. And, I mean, that was just, you know, the craziest thing I had ever heard. I knew without a doubt that Kevin Ives would never get in his car and take off for Florida. And I mean, I didn't know where they were, but I knew they weren't headed for Florida.
And Kevin knew that you and Larry would tend to frown upon him making that sort of unilateral decision.
Oh, absolutely. He knew without a doubt that, you know, that was almost the death knell of his car ownership.
Yeah,
you know, if something like that had happened, he was barely allowed to go to Little Rock at that point when he was first driving. You know, we were at first made him stay around Benton and, you know, very locally. And, you know.
So what happened that was it Friday night into Saturday morning or Saturday night into Sunday morning?
Saturday night into Sunday morning.
So what happened that Sunday morning when he had called and wondering where the boys were because his son had stormed out because he'd had an argument with his dad.
Well, after he told me he thought they'd gone to Florida, and I told him absolutely that had not happened, and he said he was going to check with Don's older sister, Gayla Henry, and see if they were over there. I was ready to call the police and the National Guard just about. I was so upset. And so he said let him check with Gayla first, and then he would call me back. And then I got the phone call again from him Doc, I can't seem to keep them straight in my head here.
Talking about
Larry was home. Yeah, Larry was home. And he was called to go to work, you know, as a locomotive engineer. They were on call, and he had been called and was about to leave the house when we found out that, you know, Kevin and Don were not where they were supposed to be. And so he laid off work, which is calling their dispatcher and telling them, you know, they were going to have to get somebody else, that he couldn't go, because we didn't know where Kevin was at that point. And you know, he wasn't about to leave town, not knowing where Kevin was.
So Curtis called his daughter's house, Gayla.
No, he actually drove over there because she didn't have a phone.
Oh, okay.
So,
in the meantime.
Well, in the meantime, Larry and I were making phone calls to Kevin's friends and, you know, everything, and kind of waiting on Curtis to call back and let us know, you know, what Gayla had to say. And actually, we were very frantic and doing everything we needed to do that we could do from the house as far as contacting people.
But Kevin just walked in the door, right?
Kevin just sauntered in the door.
As if everything was fine?
He had no idea that we knew that they had not spent the night at Don's house.
Uh-huh.
And he just came strolling in the door.
Hey, how's everybody?
And we were shocked. He was shocked. And, of course, we were all over him, mad at, for worrying about him, number one, mad because Larry had laid off work, number two, you know, and missed, basically, when you lay off work from the railroad, you know, as a crew member for the train, you miss about 2 or 2.5 days of work, which, you know, is no small amount of money anywhere when you lose that off of a paycheck. But so, you know, we were very upset with him, very angry. So needless to say, we laid down the law to him in a number of ways.
Yes. So here you have this experience, Saturday, August 15th, going into Sunday morning, August 16th. Great concern, trepidation. What on earth happened to my son? And then he comes just strolling in like everything's fine, not knowing that Don Henry's dad, Curtis, has called you.
Exactly.
At 10 o'clock on Sunday morning saying, are the boys at your house? And you're like, what are you talking about? And then I guess your son, Kevin, and Don Henry, because Don had had a spat with his dad, did wind up staying at his sister's house that night?
Yes, they did spend the night with Gayla that night.
And so everybody breathes a great sigh of relief when Kevin walks in the door on that Sunday morning, August 16th, 1987. But you and Larry not too happy about Larry missing two and a half days of work. And so some new rules are laid down.
Yeah, well, I don't know that they were new rules. They were certainly reinforced in his mind.
Okay, yeah.
For certain. You know, and I told Kevin, I said, you need to call Curtis Henry and tell him where Don is because he thinks y'all are on the way to Florida. And Kevin thought that was about as crazy as I did.
Sure.
But and he said, you got to be kidding me, Mother. And I said, no, he doesn't know where Don is. You need to call him.
Right.
And he said, I said, call him, tell him where Don is. And he said, I'll call Curtis. But he said, I'm not going to tell him where Don is. He said, you know, I'll tell him he's not on his way to Florida and he's okay.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, I'm not telling him where he is. He said, that's between him and Don. He said, yeah. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
He said, that's between them.
But I'll at least tell him he's safe and sound.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
So the next weekend, which would be Saturday, August 22nd. Sunday, August 23rd, Kevin wanted to go spend the night at Don's house the next Saturday night.
Yeah, they called me again that following Saturday night. They'd been cruising the springs like they did just about every weekend, and most kids did, which was cruising up and down Geyer Springs Road and congregating in parking lots with other kids and visiting and that kind of thing. And
Geyer Springs Road, for people outside Central Arkansas, is in southwest Little Rock.
Correct. And, of course, when he said he wanted to spend the night with Don, it was, oh, no, absolutely not. You know, we're not doing this again. And, you know, he argued with me, and we had all of the conversation you would expect. I told him I wasn't going to have a repeat of what happened the weekend before, and he told me that he and Don's dad were fine and, you know, there wasn't going to be a problem. And I said, y'all just need to stay over at our house, Kevin. Just y'all stay over here this time. And he said, Mom, his dad is already expecting us. We've already talked to him. And so I, for better or worse, bad or ugly, you know, I had this thing, and I guess maybe still do, I don't know. But, you know, opportunities to teach lessons, you know, I thought you needed to take advantage of certain opportunities to teach certain lessons. And, you know, one of the things that was high on my list for sure was being trustworthy and how trust is earned and that kind of thing. So we had a little bit of that conversation, and I thought, well, this is a good time to, you know, show him that I, you know, I can still trust him, and, you know, he's going to have to show me, you know, that he can be trusted.
And I guess from his perspective, going back to the weekend before, he probably would not have thought it was a good idea to call you guys late at night, perhaps waking you up to say, well, Don and his dad got in an argument, so we're just going to go spend the night at Don's sister's house.
Right. I'm sure he thought, well, they'll never know. It's probably
maybe,
you know,
a
what
little
went
bit
through
of,
there. Maybe a little bit of both.
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. Plus the fact that, you know, well, Gayla didn't have a phone, and apparently he and Don walked out of the house pretty abruptly. So they went straight to Gayla's and spent the night.
So going back to the next weekend, Saturday, August 22nd, you're having this discussion with Kevin, and you're thinking that perhaps you'll go ahead and give in, relent, because he always has been trustworthy.
Exactly. And, you know, the worst decision I guess I've ever made in my life, certainly the one that I've regretted most over the years, but did relent. I did call Curtis Henry, and I told him, I said, Curtis, Kevin's called me and he wants to spend the night again. Are you aware of that? And he said, yes, he knew that. And I said, is everything okay between you and Don? I said, I know neither one of us want a repeat of what happened last week.
Right.
And he said, oh, no. He said, everything's fine between Don and I. And he said, everything will be fine, Linda. And I said, he said, everything's okay. And I said, well, I said, and they're supposed to be in by 12:30, of course. And I said, you know what, if Kevin Ives isn't in by 12:30, would you give me a call? I said, I'm, even if it's 12:31, I want a phone call if Kevin Ives isn't in your house.
Right.
And he said, absolutely, no problem. He said, everything will be fine, Linda. And so I assumed everything would be fine.
This concludes the first installment of the 2019 Boys in the Tracks interview podcast. The Boys in the Tracks double homicide of 1987, one of the most compelling and enduring murder mysteries of modern American history, and certainly of the state of Arkansas. Our guest today has been Linda Ives, mother of Kevin Ives, one of the victims of the Boys in the Tracks murders, August 23rd, 1987, Saline County, Arkansas.